Today, the National Consumer Agency, the statutory body responsible for consumer protection and enforcement of consumer law, has published its consumer protection list for the January-June 2013 period. This is a list of enforcement actions taken by the agency against unfair commercial practices. Karen O'Leary, Chief Executive of the National Consumer Agency, is here to tell us about their findings. Karen, good morning to you.
Good morning, Miles.
How does enforcement law work, first of all?
As you set out, our agency works to protect consumers by enforcing the law. There's a number of pieces of legislation out there, which I won't bore your listeners with, but in general, it cuts across all types of products and services. And it means that we have a range of enforcement tools at our disposal, including up to and including prosecution. The list that we published today details a number of enforcement actions. In early 2013, we took action against six waste operators in the domestic waste sector for unfair terms in consumer contracts. And basically what that means is that they were issuing contracts to their consumers, or their terms and conditions were not balanced enough, were not balanced in favour of the consumer enough, and some of the terms were fundamentally unfair. So we sought undertakings for those firms to change the conditions and
just
the contracts.
Give us an idea of what was unfair about the terms.
There was a range of unfair terms, one of which was that in some cases contracts allowed bin companies to enter people's premises without permission, which is against the law, yes.
That surprises me.
In others, there was very, very poor and oblique language used. In some cases, Latin was used in contracts for consumers. In other cases,
waste companies are using Latin.
One of them, yes. In another
admirable.
Case, in another case, yes. In another case, and obviously contracts that are meant for consumer use are very often offered on a take it or leave it basis. You go to the waste company, it says, here's our contract.
By the way, it's in Latin, take it or leave it.
Some of it was. So in that instance, obviously people should have the opportunity to understand the contract, even though a lot of us don't read them. So obviously it's important that when companies are giving contracts on a take it or leave it basis, and a lot of them do, and that's efficient because you and I don't necessarily want to negotiate with every company we come into contact with. But the responsibility is then on the company to make sure what's in their contract is fair and balanced. Not every term has to be in favour of the consumer, but there has to be a balance there.
Interestingly, you mentioned that you weren't going to bore the listener with the long list of consumer legislation that exists. Is that not in itself a problem? Legislation by definition and almost by nature of its nature is boring. It's something that is only of interest to specialists, and in many instances only specialists, solicitors, whatever, can understand them. So that means people are not aware of their rights. Are you able to proceed on without, for example, the basis on the basis of complaints from people who don't know that they're being bilked?
Well, I think you don't necessarily need to understand legislation to understand that something isn't fair.
Yeah.
So a lot of people have a very good sense of what's right and wrong, and what may occur to them is not a fair practice. So that's the first thing. The second thing is, when companies write contracts, they're very easily found and read by us. So in fact, one of our roles is to sort of look at those where we have resources to do it. The other side of it is, a lot of the complaints we get are for issues that are very, very clear cut. And I'll give you an example. We got 250 complaints about retail pricing. Now, you and I know consumers have to shop, they have to buy food. It's a massive part of a family's budget every week. So obviously having confidence that when you walk into a shop, the price is there, that it's accurate, and that it's the same price you're charged at the till is really important for consumers to know. That's the law.
There's nothing you can do about the actual price.
No, we don't have price control, but we do actually say that if you're going to charge a price, you should let people know what it is.
Yeah, and if there's a special offer when you go into a supermarket, 2 for 1 or something like that, and you go to the till and you're charged 2 for 2, basically, this is the kind of thing that you want to know about.
Exactly. So what we would do is we would obviously get about 60,000 calls a year from consumers. The vast majority of those calls are of the variety, I'm not sure what my rights are in this situation. What are they? So we not only enforce the law, we also help people with information that they need to enforce their own rights.
So people feel there's something a bit off about this. This smells a bit fishy. So they can take it to you. Is it a bit fishy? Is there anything that you can do about it?
Yes. And very often there's a lot that consumers can do as well. So in the pricing complaint scenario, we would take those We got about 250 so far up to June, which is the period of the report. And we look at those, each of those, and we would follow up with each of the traders. In order to take enforcement action, we would need to gather evidence ourselves. So we also send out inspectors. So we did about 81 visits to various traders, and we got 46 enforcement actions out of that.
Have you enough inspectors?
We do. Yes, yes.
You're happy with the...
Absolutely. And I think one of the key things is one of the challenges of any state agency is to use the resources effectively. So we employ what we call risk-based. And basically what that means is, how bad is this? Who's it harming? How many people? And how much is it costing people? And that's how we prioritise our work. That's what we should be doing. Also, an awful lot of our work can be desk-based, because, as you know, people shop online. People sometimes you can find things out that you don't need to send someone on the street to find out. One of the things about consumer calls is that it gives us a huge amount of information about what's going on in the market. We also have a website to help people as well on information, and we get about 90,000 visits a month to that. So it's extremely popular. A lot of information there about rights and about personal finance.
I think one of our texters is commenting on the use of Latin. We have a text here which simply says caveat emptor.
Yeah.
I think most of us know what that means in Latin. Somebody else says, consumer agency My Eye, we are the most ripped off people on planet Earth, bar none, in every aspect of everything we buy. That might be slightly over the top, but as you say, there's no price control. You can't do anything about prices. It's up to people to shop around.
I think consumers have more power than they think. I think that shopping habits have changed fundamentally since the recession kicked in. And we all know that pre the crisis, economic crisis, a lot of people were shopping. They weren't necessarily price aware. And yet people understood that they were probably paying over the odds for what was being sold to them. We do research on consumer issues, and one of the things we found is that consumer shopping habits have undergone a revolution almost, in that they're not shopping in just one shop, they're shopping in three. So they're shopping around, they're picking and choosing who they're buying from, and in short, they're exercising their power. Mm. And prices have come down as a result of that.
The National Consumer Agency has also been pursuing investigations into the sale of clocked cars.
Yes, that's a very, very harmful practice, because obviously the only reason why anyone would clock a car that I am aware of is that you would mislead someone you're selling to, as it's the nature of the value of it, because obviously mileage and value are very closely aligned. So one of the things we do is we would take not a huge number, about 50 complaints a year we would get about clocking, where a consumer has bought a car from a dealer and they're looking and they're kind of going, there's something off here, or they go for an NCT or they check the log or something comes to their attention where they realise that the mileage is not what it should be, or the odometer reading, it's kilometres now of course, is not what it should be. It's a very harmful practice.
Is it hard to actually prove?
It is difficult to... It is complex to take a case from complaint to court, yes. But we're very determined to keep doing it because the nature of the harm is quite high. And in fact, in this case, on our consumer protection list, we secured a conviction against the dealer for the sale. And actually, the conviction is about misleading as to the mileage, not the clocking itself. And we also got a compensation order for the consumer of €1,750. So that's following conviction, the court awarded the consumer that money. And I think it's really, really important that the two things, first of all, the message goes out to car dealers that this practice is unacceptable, illegal, very, very serious, and we'll take action on foot of it. And the second message is for consumers buying cars, second-hand cars from dealerships, is to do some basic checks. Look at the logbook, ask for NCT records, check in. There are some websites that offer car check services. It's well worth your while doing it.
You took 46, I think you said, was it enforcement actions against a range of businesses. Break it down. Yeah. Just dig down into those figures for us a little bit.
Those are mainly in the retail sector. So as I said, that in terms of what people spend their money on, retail purchases are a huge part of that. So we do have quite a focus on that. Those enforcement actions are ones that we can take ourselves, so we don't have to take them to court, which means that they are quite efficient, they're cost effective from the state's perspective, and they don't take up court time. So what happens is we would send our inspectors out to visit a range of traders. Some of them come to our attention from calls from the public, and some of them they're chosen at random or chosen on a risk basis in terms of their size and market share. So we would visit them. We would perform specific checks on price display. So are they displaying prices? And then we would also do very specific checks on whether the price at the shelf is the same as the price charged at the till or less. So in other words, if it's higher at the till, it's a breach. And therefore, if we prove a breach in that, we can issue a compliance notice, and we issued 18 of those. If the price is not displayed at all, we can issue fixed payment notices, which in normal man's language is an on-the-spot fine.
Final question. If I was a rogue trader, are you happy, if I'm a rogue trader, that you have a tight enough operation, an efficient enough operation, and a big enough, I think it would be the important thing, operation, that I should be in fear and trembling that the National Consumer Agency is going to come and take me away?
Well, I think for depending on how you define a rogue trader, you could have a very responsible trader who does the wrong thing, can be prosecuted and has been by us in the past. That's the first message. And the second thing is the vast majority of what you call rogue traders, consumers are very clear about who they are and what to look out for. And we would look at those calls. If someone is deliberately scamming you, then obviously it's very much a can you catch them and then can you gather evidence to prosecute? It all depends on the evidence.
Okay, Karen, thank you very much indeed for that. Karen O'Leary, Chief Executive of the National Consumer Agency.